You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the NL West. I am Allison Twitter from MLB.com, and as games are starting in both Arizona and Florida, we're just sort of getting a little bit of a look as to what is going to happen throughout the month. Not huge news coming out of any particular camp. Of course, the Dodgers named Clayton Kershaw as their opening day starter. That surprised really nobody, but it is one of those pomp and circumstance things that teams like to do. And as far as some of the other teams, bullpen spots are open for several teams, and teams like the Rockies and the Diamondbacks are surveying their 60-man-plus camps and seeing who might fit in best on opening day. So as this month goes on, we will see how rosters start to shape up, but we are still a long way away from knowing what the final word is going to be. And I'm here with my colleague Ken Gernick, who is in Arizona, and he is covering the Dodgers for MLB.com. And Ken, there's not a ton of huge news coming out of Dodgers camp. It's really kind of quiet across the whole division. But there are a few things that have come out in the last couple of days. One is that Clayton Kershaw is the opening day starter, which, okay, is not really a big shock to anybody. We were all expecting that. But it is kind of cool. He's the first to make five consecutive starts on opening day for the Dodgers since Don Sutton had seven. So that kind of indicates that they have a franchise icon in the making. Is that what we can glean from this whole thing?
Yeah, well, I think when he won the MVP and a third Cy Young, you could pretty much glean from that. So, sure, he's the face of the team. I mean, Puig is like the fan favorite, but this team is built around Clayton Kershaw, who's probably the best pitcher in baseball. And, you know, he's five in a row, opening day starts, and, you know, the Dodgers hope he becomes 10 in a row. And they're just building around him. They've got a good rotation, but it's topped with what they feel is the best pitcher in the game.
Is that just like, do they really need to announce this? I mean, I know I've covered several spring trainings, and I mean, sometimes, like, I mean, with the Astros, it was so obvious it was Roy Oswalt. And these are kind of things that they like to announce later on, but I guess they just kind of want to set their rotation, and it was a very obvious thing to everybody. I'm sure there's not a whole lot of pomp and circumstance that went along with this.
Well, you know, if everybody's healthy, there really isn't much to announce. I mean, it's him and Greinke, and then Ryu, and then Brandon McCarthy, and Brett Anderson, and there's not much mystery to it unless somebody gets hurt. You know, it has happened in the past where somebody does get hurt. Greinke wasn't ready last year after hurting his calf. So, and as they point out, you know, that's only necessarily the way it is to begin with off days and stuff. They might skip a fifth guy. So, it's more for the fans, and it's more ceremonial, I think, than anything else, because everybody's going to get, or at least your top four guys are going to get 30-plus starts. And, you know, but for the pomp and circumstance of opening day, you know, and for the fan attention, you probably want your best guy going up against the other team's best guy. So, you know, that's what opening day starter comes down to usually.
So, Don Mattingly pretty much confirmed that Jimmy Rollins is going to be the leadoff hitter, not only in the exhibition opener, but really this season. It didn't sound like a huge ringing endorsement, and just kind of saying, well, there's not really anybody else that fits that bill. And I'm sure he didn't, you know, mean for it to sound like a slight on Jimmy Rollins, but did that, I mean, was there any indication that it would have gone any other way? Were you guys expecting Jimmy Rollins to be the leadoff guy?
Yeah, if not him, then who? There really is nobody else, you know, after D. Gordon was kind of the prototype for a leadoff hitter, and they traded him and replaced him with Howie Kendrick at second base. And Rollins, even at age 36, is probably the closest they have to a leadoff hitter, but in truth, they really don't have one. You know, Rollins isn't the MVP-type player that he was 7 or 8 years ago. But on this team with this lineup, it's not built like last year's was with a D. Gordon who gets on base and rattles the opposing pitcher. You know, you have Rollins up there just because he's probably faster than anybody still at his age. But this isn't going to be a wild-running team. You know, you have Puig, and he's not running, or at least last year didn't run as much as the year before. Without Gordon, you know, there's not healthy Matt Kemp in the lineup, and even Hanley Ramirez. So, you know, Rollins probably is still capable of maybe 30 stolen bases. So, well, once again, you know, by default, he's the guy at the top.
Is there any other intrigue in the rest of the order, or is it pretty much understood out there, you know, basically what it's going to be?
Well, the only question is who winds up in center field. You know, is rookie Jock Peterson ready? If not, let's say he is, then they probably trade Andre Ethier and use Chris Heisey as a right-handed platoon for Peterson. If Peterson isn't ready, they probably do the same thing with Ethier and not trade him, and then he can split time with Heisey. But outside of that, the other positions are all locked up with veterans. So there really is very little mystery to this team, and that's the way they structured it during the offseason, so that they would have 5 established starters in the rotation and 8 established, or at least 7 established position players to pretty much play every day with maybe a platoon in center. And so then we get back to the bullpen, which was a problem at the end of last year and is still a problem, you know, in part because of Kenley Jansen's foot surgery that has him out until May. So that's really where the focus is, and most of the intrigue of spring training will be how do they put together that bullpen, especially the back end of the bullpen to pitch the 7th, 8th, and 9th innings, and now it's a tougher task because they don't have their real closer. So, you know, that'll really be the main role of the spring training is to sort that out.
And, of course, there's always a kind of a ticky-tacky health updates every day. So can you update a little bit? I guess Ryu and Peralta are 2 of the ones that we're sort of looking at right now. What's the latest on each of those guys?
Yeah, they're minor. They're healthy now. They're back on track, and they're just playing catch-up. But, you know, games don't even start till tomorrow, so they've got a month to catch up. And, you know, barring a setback, that those shouldn't be a problem. Peralta's, you know, a little concerned because he's going to be 39. And he's never had a shoulder problem before. But he says he's feeling fine now. So, you know, they'll kind of hold their breath every time he takes a mound because he was a big part of getting to the 9th inning. One of the first acquisitions of Andrew Friedman, he brought him over from Tampa Bay. So he is a big piece of that bullpen. And if he's not healthy, then they've really lost their 9th and 8th inning relievers. So, he's kind of a key, and especially with Kenley Jansen out, as they kind of try to piece together the back end of the bullpen.
So this is kind of it's a minor thing, but it's a little interesting to me just because, like, when you have 5 starters, and it's pretty much – there's really no room. You know, in a lot of camps they have, like, you know, the 5th starter position open, and they'll have a handful of prospects. They'll have some non-roster guys. But I thought it was interesting that Eric Bedard is, like, a non-roster guy sort of gunning for a starting role, knowing that there really isn't one. And when that happens, most guys, they would then go to AAA and then serve as insurance for whatever reason if they're needed at the major league level. But Bedard is sort of a different story in that I think he's 36 or 37. And do you think that he would accept, like, a minor league assignment? And I know this isn't anything like a major thing, but he's going to get some innings this spring. Do you think that he's kind of maybe – trying to audition for some other teams that might need somebody toward the end of the month more than he's really thinking that he's going to fit into the Dodgers picture at all?
Well, I think it's both. I think they're always, you know, a guy like that is always pitching in hopes that some team will need him, whether it's this team or some other. So at least he's got a showcase and allowing himself to get in shape and be ready in case somebody needs him. But that somebody could be the Dodgers too. You know, they've got 2 pitchers at the back end of the rotation that have a history of injuries, and Brett Anderson, Brandon McCarthy. So, you know, even the Dodgers are looking at him as potentially, you know, a fill-in guy, and he's not the only one. They signed Chad Gaudin. They've got several pitchers that have some major league experience, David Huff, who has started in the past, and a few others that, a few young guys, Mike Bolsinger for one. And Juan Nicasio, even though they're looking at him as a reliever right now. So, you know, they know they have 2 pitchers in their rotation that have a history of injuries. They have Zane Greinke, who wasn't able to start last year and has already had an elbow injection. They have Ryu, who's had a little back stiffness. They never get through a season with only 5. You know, very often they use 10 or more. So, you know, there could be a spot for Bedard, and he hasn't said that he won't go to the minor league, even though he's a veteran. You know, like, as you mentioned, he's pitching for a job and also pitching so that other teams can see him in case somebody has kind of an emergency, and he'll be ready and in shape.
And inevitably, that will probably happen, as is the case. A lot of people are kind of scrambling. A lot of teams are scrambling at the end of spring training. So he may get a shot somewhere. Anyway, Ken, thank you so much. Good luck, and we'll talk to you soon. I am on the line with Chris Haft, who covers the Giants for MLB.com. And, Chris, I like to call this overreaction week because the games have started, and everybody gets to overreact about the performances of players that are appearing for the first time in their first or second or third game. So the Giants have really hit the jackpot on this because Madison Bumgarner was not good. Tim Lincecum was good. And Hunter Strickland, everyone is still freaking out about him, kind of picking up where they left off from October. So what kind of impressions did you have from some of these guys' first outing?
Well, my impressions, yes, were pretty poor, just about everybody. I mean, very few of the pitchers looked good. The A's scored 18 runs off them in 2 days, 9 runs each day. They didn't really sustain much offense, so they looked anything but like defending world champions. However, I can't emphasize enough how little these performances mean and how just meaningless these games are. It's not the whole team performing together. It's, you know, half of the starting squad one day, half of the other half of the starting squad the next. And then even then, these are guys who aren't, they're not in shape yet. The hitter's timing is not there. The pitchers haven't fully developed their repertoire of deliveries. And so, you know, you've got, what they like to say is, we're not getting ready for, you know, March 1st. We want to be ready for April 1st, or, you know, whatever opening day is. In this case, for the Giants, April 6th. But so people who are panicking, they should be encouraged to calm down.
Right. It's nice to be a veteran, somebody who has a guaranteed spot on the team, because they really can. Do whatever they want, not do whatever they want, but they, you know, there's certain things they want to work on. There's certain things they want to try, whatever it is. I mean, they're not trying to win a spot on the team. So for those guys, it's really, I mean, I remember my years covering the Astros. I mean, Roy Oswalt, sometimes he'd go out there and just throw fastballs because he just wanted to get a feel for it back. And he went, and, you know, he was fooling nobody and he was getting hit. It didn't matter. But for some of the other guys that are trying to win spots on this team, then they really have to kind of air it out a little bit, and that can also be not good sometimes. What do you think about that?
Well, you're right, Allison. I've seen just about every single combination of phenomena. I remember I covered the Astros before you,
right.
And I remember one spring, Mark McLemore, who ended up having a pretty good career. Hit literally about 600, 650. And so he won the second base job. And privately, not a whole lot of people were thrilled because they knew what was going to happen in the regular season. And what happened in the regular season was that Mark McLemore hit about 180, 190 and got released. You know,
exactly.
So the spring training was absolutely illusory. I think... I don't want to bore people with all the examples of what I've, you know, the things I see, but that's just typical. And then I've seen guys who, you know, hit a .150 or whatever, and come out opening day and hit, you know, get two or three base hits. I think what you just want to, what you're looking for in spring training, ideally, is for guys to see some whether it's a hitter or a pitcher, maybe you see some progress over the 5 or 6 weeks, and you just see consistency, you know, repeating their swing, repeating their form, that sort of thing. Tim Lincecum gave up a run and a double in his one inning of work the other day. But I think what most people saw was the steadiness of his delivery. He pretty much had his form under control, and therefore his outing was an encouraging one. So again, the results almost don't matter.
Exactly. There's, I guess, like maybe one relief spot open in the pen, assuming a small-man pitching staff, which it seems that that's what's going to be. So let's talk about Strickland a little bit. I mean, he nailed it on the head, and there's kind of a cliche, like, yeah, you can throw 100 miles an hour, but if you throw it right down the middle, major league hitters are going to be able to connect with it and take it out of the ballpark. So he realizes that, and even though he's got an overpowering fastball, he's got to figure out ways that they can't get around it. So what do you think about his chances this spring, and what are they kind of, are they have their eye on him, and what do you think the plan is?
Well, they have their eye on him, but I think he could benefit most from a trip to Sacramento, their new AAA location.
All right.
And because he came up from AA last year, people forget that. And sure, he was impressive, you know, first outing or two. He saved a big game or two. And that it was impressive. But he obviously needs physically and, you know, age-wise, he's certainly mature, and he's been through a lot with the Tommy John surgery. But I think he needs to, you know, learn a new wrinkle or two with his pitches, maybe put a little more movement on them. Obviously, he needs command. His command's an issue because he's not keeping it down. And so I personally think beginning the year in AAA would be the best thing for him, but technically he's still a contender for that last bullpen spot.
Chris, thank you so much. Appreciate your time, and we will talk to you in person next week. As usual, we are joined by Corey Brock, who covers our wonderful Padres. And Corey, now that we are further away from the offseason and not really talking about everything that they've done, and now we're going to talk about everything that they want to do. So I found it interesting. There seems to be an abundance of pitchers in big league camp. I don't know. Maybe that's kind of a normal number. It seems a little high with 29. But maybe it seems high because there's not a lot of openings. So how are all these guys going to get time, innings? How is that all mapped out?
Yeah, coin flip, Allison. I think that's how they're going to rock, scissors, paper. You know, I know it's going to be kind of a challenge. You know, you play all these games over here, and you would have to think that there's enough innings for everybody to go around. But that's the simple math fact is that they have to get pretty creative here because you're trying to get guys, you know, the proper amount of work to get them ready for the regular season. And you're also trying to evaluate some guys who are kind of on the bubble, and you have some prospects in camp. You want to get them innings to get a look at these guys before you turn them over to minor league camp. So it's kind of a jigsaw puzzle a little bit that involves a lot of math, hashtag math, which, you know, as journalists, at least for myself, I'm not really good at. So it's, you know, talking to the pitching coach, it's kind of been a challenge. So they're trying to sort through a lot of this. You know, they have a couple of four guys battling for that number five job. You know, they want to lay eyes on them as much as possible this spring. So it's, again, you know, this may come down to some B games, taking a look at guys on the minor league side once those games get going. So I think they feel like they're going to get a chance to evaluate all these guys. They just might have to get a little creative in doing it.
Would you say, let's talk a little bit about Brandon Morrow. He's pretty interesting because he was, you know, seriously considering signing with the Padres. This was before sort of the explosion, if I have the timeline right, sort of before the explosion of all these signings. And then when James Shields signed on. So it kind of diminished his prospects to be in the starting rotation. Of course, if he doesn't make that, he'd be a prime candidate for the bullpen. But he has a lot of upside, except that the last 2 years have been derailed by injuries. But would you say that he's got the edge at this point? He's a veteran guy, 30 years old, to win a spot on this pitching staff somewhere?
Yeah, I do. And I've kind of thought all along, even with the Shields signing, that you know, he's kind of the favorite for that number five spot, that he was going to be a favorite for a rotation spot regardless. I think they think pretty highly of him. I think when he came back from, you know, his last injury last September with the Blue Jays, that his velocity was good. You know, it's a former number one pick, and when he's been healthy, you know, he's been pretty good. I know there's been some command issues in the past, but, you know, if we don't think back too far, this guy almost threw a no-hitter, has been pretty dominant at times. And, you know, yeah, they certainly had some opportunities to go elsewhere and pitch in relief, but he wants to start. You know, they've promised him every opportunity to do so. And I really think that, you know, he is he's the best of this group. And I think that'll prove to be true as we march throughout spring training here this month. And yeah, I think he's going to be dynamic. I think he's going to be really good. I think his bullpens have been pretty good so far, you know, from what you could really truly gather out of those. But, you know, we'll get a first chance to look at him here sometime this weekend. And, you know, I think they like the experience factor. I think they like his stuff. You know, he knows how to handle himself. I think they feel like he'll slide right in. And, you know, especially when you look around the league at number fives, that probably feel like they have a pretty good leg up there in terms of what they're running out there as a fifth starter.
So the games are underway, and everybody gets, of course, very excited about that because they're actually going to be watching a baseball game. And so, of course, I mean, the pitchers are just starting slowly with one inning, two innings, and the position players that everyone knows will play, like, you know, they'll just get a couple at bats. But at what point, like, covering the team, like the first 10 days of spring training or workouts, at what point are you like, oh my God, I need to watch a baseball game before I lose my mind? Which day does that start setting in?
Yeah, I think it was a few days after I got into camp. Yeah, it's interesting. You kind of go through this progression of spring, Allison, you know, like where you're, you know, as spring training is kind of creeping up, you kind of like, I kind of got that itch to get there. And then you get here and, you know, guys are going through these PFPs and these bullpen sessions, and you can't wait for games to start. And then games start, of course, inevitably, and you can't wait for the regular season to get here. So it all kind of plots along this course here where you start to get edgy at a certain point, and you hope that that next step is right around the corner. So, yeah, it kind of felt like the games showed up right about the time when they needed to. And in talking to the players, I think they felt that way too, especially for – you know, the pitchers who've been here a few days longer, I think they're kind of itching and, you know, ready to go. And, you know, the position players certainly don't need as much time to get going and get their swings down and all that. But, you know, I think, you know, that we talked about the renewed sense of optimism, the excitement. And, you know, Buddy Black, I know before the first game, talked about when he wrote down the lineup card, Allison, you know, he let's face it, you know, and Buddy's a guy that likes to tinker around with lineups. I imagine he's sitting at home or he's sitting out to dinner with his wife, Nan, you know, during the winter, and he's writing down lineups on paper napkins. I know him well enough to know that he's been doing that. But he said, you know, before that first game Wednesday against the Mariners, that it sort of felt kind of real to him, you know, when you first write down that first lineup, even though, you know, it's a spring training game and you're writing Kemp and Upton down for the first time, it starts to hit home a little bit. So this is, you know, this is the first game of many of what they're hoping is going to be a fantastic season.
Yeah, you have to think that Buddy's got a little kick in his step when he's writing these lineups down. He's seeing the names that he gets to write down. I mean, I'm sure he would have to admit in a very honest moment that this is probably the most excited he's been in many years to be filling out a lineup card.
Yeah, the names are a little different, Allison. It's we haven't seen anything quite like this before in my eight previous years, and his eight previous years too.
So I was just talking with the Rockies, with them, Thomas Harding, and they are sort of, their position players are sort of required to be very versatile because they're going to have a 12-man pitching staff. But with the Padres, it seems like, I mean, you were writing about how the infield is been. Pretty versatile too, or I guess it was actually one of our colleagues that was writing this story, just about how, like, there's a lot of infielders that can play a lot of different positions and do a lot of different things, and how can that help the team?
Well, you know, and one of the guys that I think has kind of been a key piece to all this that I haven't really talked a whole lot about is Clint Barmas. And this is a guy, you know, you were talking about Brandon Morrow, Allison, the guy that signed on early before the big bonanza hit. Clint Barmas was another one who really signed early on. I think he might have been the final week of November. And, you know, it was funny in talking to him afterwards, you know, in his conversation with Preller, and Preller saying, you know, hey, we're going to do some things here. And, of course, you hear that not really understanding what that means, but certainly he had a better perspective by the time December ended. But, you know, Clint he started at shortstop his first game, the charity game against the Mariners, and they're going to use him at third. They're going to use him a little bit at second. He might even play some first. Kind of sets up like a perfect National League bench piece. So Will Middlebrooks, who they got from the Red Sox, you know, he's competing for that third base job. You know, he may end up playing a little first base as well. So, yeah, they have some interchangeable pieces, which, you know, I've always found for a National League piece, our National League team is especially important. You know, the more versatility you have and maybe some guys you could bring off the bench late in the game, I think that could really help some teams out and give the manager a whole lot more flexibility.
So one last question. I want to talk a little bit about Jason Lane just because, I mean, admittedly, he's one of my favorite players as he played for the Astros many years ago and just a great guy. And I'm just so intrigued by the fact that he has reinvented himself as a left-handed pitcher. I mean, he's sticking around a little bit. So he started this venture a couple of years ago, and he seems to have found some success with that. So assuming that there's not really going to be space for him in the majors, or maybe there will, like, where do you see it going with Jason Lane as far as, you know, how his spring is going to shake out, where he might fit in the organization?
Yeah, one of my favorite stories too, Allison. It was kind of neat to see him come up last year, made those two relief appearances with the Padres, went back down to Triple-A El Paso, then came up and made that start, his first big league start as a pitcher in Atlanta, and pitched great, like one run over six or seven innings, and they didn't score any runs for him, which was, you know, kind of a theme last year, of course. Hence all the changes, but what a great story, you know, for a guy that was out of the big league since 2007 and, you know, did a lot of wonderful things, certainly as a position player. You saw a lot of that in Houston, was a part of such a great group of players and, you know, did it the hard way and reinvented himself and worked his way back from independent league ball. I mean, this guy had nothing given to him and has completely reinvented himself as a, you know, kind of a softer thrower with supreme command and certainly a knowledge of what the hitters are trying to do, and I think he uses that to his advantage, and you know, he's going to get some opportunities to pitch here in spring. The coaching staff knows what he can do. You know, he'll begin the year in AAA, but I think they understand that, you know, if they get in a pinch, and you know how the season goes, Allison, you never finish with the same five you start with. You know, I have no doubt that we'll probably see Jason Lane at some point, and, you know, I have no doubt that he'll come up here and he'll compete his rear off, and he'll throw a ton of strikes and give his team a chance to win. It's a great story. The guy's 38 years old, and he still has this thirst to learn all he can about pitching. I mean, he's nowhere near closing the door on that, and it's just a great story, and I think there's a great lesson in perseverance and love of the game, you know, at the risk of being sappy here. I just think there's something really cool about it.
Yeah, so do I, and I'm happy for him because he really had a hard time sort of solidifying himself in the Astros, you know, the Astros back then, it was just hard to break through to that infield or outfield. And so nice to see him still playing. Anyway, Corey, thank you very much. And I'll see you in person very soon. By the wonder of technology, I am joined by my colleague, Thomas Harding, who is very, very far away from me, but we are connected on MLB.com Extras. So Thomas, let's talk about the Rockies. Games are underway and I'm reading some of your coverage and a little bit of conversation about the bullpen having been taxed last year, and they're trying to maintain that a little bit. The reason that the bullpen is taxed is because the starters aren't going long enough. So it's kind of a chicken and egg thing, right? And how are they going to rectify that?
That's right. Yeah, chicken and eggs and the bullpen, they want to be the chicken and the eggs. They're just basically saying that they have to pitch better. And they do have some good arms in the bullpen. I mean, Boone Logan, who was hurt last year, just watching him in the early part of spring training, he's pitching, you know, he looks pretty sharp. And if he's able to join Rex Brothers and have two really good lefties and then Christian Friedrich, you've got three hard-throwing lefties. They added some hard throwers from the right side. And they've got some guys coming back that have done pretty well. I mean, LaTroy Hawkins is still a pretty good pitcher. Don't forget you brought in John Axford, who could be the closer if LaTroy Hawkins gets tired.
So let me talk about John Axford for just 1 second. He was just added to the 40-man. So just a couple weeks ago we were talking about he was a late addition as a non-roster invitee. But I guess a 60-day DL, and now Axford is guaranteed contract and – I guess that makes sense, right? I mean, this was not a situation where they were kind of doubting what he could bring to the table. So what made that happen so quickly?
Well, I think that it was going to happen at some point. I mean, when you sign a guy to $2.6 million, even if it is a minor league deal, there's a feeling that he's going to be on your team. It wasn't like he was not going to make this team. And the opportunity was there with Tyler Chatwood with the elbow injury. I'm sure they were just waiting for a certain time to do it. I'm not privy to all the administrative stuff that goes on with that, but this is a move that the Rockies wanted to make. I mean, if you're John Axford, you probably had some opportunities, and he did say he had some opportunities to sign with other teams, basically a major league deal even before showing up at camp. So I would imagine this was in the works all along. And like I say, with Troy Hawkins being 42 years old, they're going to look for opportunities to make sure that they don't run him into the ground. And if you give those closing opportunities to John Axford, he's done it at this level many times in the past, and he's done it with some distinction at times. Maybe not the most consistency that you'd like from the closer, but he certainly is an option to use at the end of the game.
So this time of year, I like to call this overreaction week because, there'll be like Madison Bumgarner for the Giants. He had a bad first outing. Tim Lincecum had a really good first outing. So, of course, everybody's jumping to conclusions and overreacting about everything when really this stuff is kind of silly because Madison Bumgarner clearly could be going out there trying to just, like, loosen up his arm and maybe throw a couple fastballs and see how it feels. And might get knocked around a little bit. It really doesn't matter. But with Walt Weiss, so he seems to be taking a step back and not, like, being really forthcoming with, like, setting a lineup at this point. Are there things that he needs to play around with? Does he have some decisions to make? What are some of the factors going into that?
Well, it's something where he has actually a lot of options. If you start looking at this lineup, Charlie Blackmon at the top of it, you have Corey Dickerson, who's a good hitter. You have Carlos Gonzalez, Troy Tulowitzki, Justin Morneau. These are batting champion type of hitters. And Nolan Arenado is getting there. So really for him, if people don't get hurt, of course, we talk about this all the time with the Rockies. If people don't get hurt, then it's just simply finding what works that day. I mean, does he really have to have one set lineup every time out? You've got a situation where your catcher is Nick Hundley, who's a kind of bottom of the order hitter, but when he doesn't catch Willian Rosario when Rosario's playing first base, you've got a guy who is like right behind the heart of the order as far as power is concerned. So he has a lot of good options. He played for Tony La Russa, Walt Weiss did, for much of his career, and La Russa was one of the classic guys that really didn't want hitters to feel like they had to be at one place or another in a lineup. He would change things up. He'd even, bat the pitcher eighth sometimes to get his third hitter some more chances. So there are many things that he would do with this lineup, but just setting one in stone is not one of them. And part of it, too, is you have a right-handed hitter in Drew Stubbs that they got a lot out of him last year. So when you rest a Carlos Gonzalez or rest a Charlie Blackmon, there's a pretty good right-handed piece there.
So there seems to be an emphasis on versatility. So the 13-man pitching staff seems to be kind of a reality with the Rockies, which means that there's going to be a lot of position players that need to be able to do a lot of different things, be able to maybe play more than one position and be able to, come off the bench or do whatever. Does that make it more complicated when you only have, 12 position players to play around with?
Well, it's I guess it does make it more complicated, but I've been covering this team since 2000, and I would say that somewhere around 80% of the time that I've covered this team, that's the lineup structure. So what they have to do is really concentrate on being versatile, especially on the bench. I mean, you go back to 2007, they had Jamie Carroll, who ate up a lot of different positions. But they tried actually having that big bopper on the bench, Jason Giambi, back in 2009, and he stayed until Walt Weiss became manager. But Weiss is more apt to keep guys who can play a whole lot of different positions and start at a whole lot of different positions rather than the big bat off the bench. The Rockies, they have to do this. I mean, if there's a homestand at Coors Field, it only makes sense to carry 13 pitchers because even if you win all those games, there will be one or two games that are of the 11-9 variety or maybe a couple of extra inning games, and suddenly you have burned a 12-man pitching staff.
Okay, well, things to keep our eyes on. And, Thomas, thank you, and I will be seeing you in person. We're going to have a podcast in person very soon, so I'm looking forward to that.
We will be looking live at one another. That'll be great.
Thanks, T. And I am speaking with my good friend, Steve Gilbert, who is all the way over in Arizona. So isn't this cool, Steve, that we can, have this conversation and be thousands of miles from each other?
Modern technology, I'll tell you, it's a great thing, isn't it?
It is wonderful. Yeah, so I'm sitting here in Dunedin looking at an empty ballpark because I am at the Blue Jays complex, but nobody else is here. So let's talk a little bit about Addison Reed. I didn't know this was happening, but he's not going to get on the mound for a while. He's got a sore right shoulder, and he thinks that it'll be like March 20th before he gets in the game. Is that an issue at all here?
You know, it's a good question, Allison. It looks like he said by the latest March 20th he would be able to be back up on the mound and pitching. He had a little shoulder soreness. They did tests. There was no underlying conditions, no structural damage or anything like that. But they did shut him down for a couple of weeks, which then, you know, a guy has to then get re-stretched out to be ready to get back up on the mound. So will he have enough time if he's on the mound by March 20th to be ready for April 6th? Probably, but it would be close. So it's certainly something that bears watching, but something that they're not overly concerned about as far as injury situation.
Okay, so we're at a time of the spring where the workouts are over, the games are underway, and, of course, everything's under a microscope. So as long as we're talking about injury, are there any other injury updates that we can cover at this point?
No, although I was just getting ready to write something on Matt Reynolds, the left-handed reliever who you know, he's coming off Tommy John surgery, and his elbow feels great, he said, but he strained his oblique a little bit the other day. So that sets him back a few days, but nothing too severe.
Yeah, so this time of year, I mean, is it kind of hard to tell, like, what's going to be more severe? I mean, sometimes guys just, like, pull things. I think just maybe shaking off off-season rust doesn't really apply as much to today's ball player because they stay in such tremendous shape during the off-season, but they're staying in shape, and then there's being in baseball shape. And there's a lot of soreness early on because it's just a totally different it's just different. And guys will tell you that. So, when you hear this stuff, is it mostly not a cause for alarm for most of these guys?
Yeah, it doesn't seem like there's any alarm amongst Chip Hale or any of the D-backs front office about any of these things. As of right now, nothing nothing totally unexpected. I mean, obviously, Addison Reed thing was a little bit unexpected, but not, again, nothing serious, so nothing that they're going to, fret too much about.
Okay, so let's talk about Yasmani Tomas, because, of course, it's a day ending in Y, so we have to talk about him. So he was shagging balls in the outfield. He's been playing mostly, exclusively at third base this whole spring, getting all of his workouts over there, getting all of his repetition. He's starting to shag balls in a little bit of the outfield, but he played third base in his first game. Kind of mixed reviews on that. So how did you feel watching him? How did you feel he did?
Well, you know, it was a little hard to judge him defensively only because in that game against Arizona State University, he didn't get any balls hit his direction. You know, he's kind of looked at times not as smooth as some of the other fielders during the drills. But again, it'll be interesting to see him in game action. And they're going to try to get him some work in the outfield simply as a way of getting him more at bat because they do have some other people they want to play at third base and take a look at third base, like Jake Lamb, who's one of their top prospects. So in an effort to get him as many at bats and as many looks at major league pitching as possible, they're going to give him some time out in the outfield.
So I was cracking up at your coverage of Photo Day. For people out there that might not know what Photo Day is, Photo Day is basically the time where if you need a picture of a baseball player in his cap, this is the day to get it. And so guys hold a nameplate, like a piece of paper with their name on it, and they go from station to station to station with the AP and MLB and the scoreboard people from their own teams, and they just like sit there with it and they hold up the sign about who they are, and they get their picture taken. And it's really kind of a long process. And it was cracking me up because guys were like, apparently there was like a photocopier in one of the rooms where guys were waiting for their turn. And it kind of reminded me of like a G-rated version of like a Christmas party from the 80s when people would have too many adult beverages and they'd start photocopying themselves. So guys were basically like putting their faces down and like photocopying their face.
Yeah, you know, they were using the press interview room for some TV as a TV station where they had guys film some promos, and they kind of got backlogged into the our little workroom there where we do have a photocopier. And started with A.J. Pollock putting the side of his face down in the photocopier, and then Josh Colemanter wanted to see if he could get a full-on face, so he just put his touched his nose to the thing. So they were having quite a bit of good time. Boys will be boys. Photo Day is always a fun day to kind of watch those guys go through, and I'm sure for them it's not always as fun because it gets a little tedious.
Yeah, I'm just glad that the photocopier still can be a crowd pleaser, even, you know, 50 years after it debuted. And so this other report from Forbes, and I think we all knew this, but the Diamondbacks, they're always touted for being just a great place to work. And so they're officially now one of the best organizations to work for in sports. According to Forbes, they're one of the top 10. How did they come up with this kind of process? And I know Derek Hall is just out in front, and he does so many positive things, being the president of the Diamondbacks. Is it that great of a place to work?
Well, apparently it is, because they rank in all these different rankings. They've ranked 8 straight years in a poll of the Phoenix Business Journal, and now Forbes nationwide. They chose 10 sports-related organizations, and the Diamondbacks were the lone baseball team. There was one basketball team, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and surprisingly enough, the NFL home office was also named there, but that was about it. And the rest were like sports marketing agencies. But yeah, Derek Hall, they take a lot of pride in that, how they treat their employees. They have a number of employee outings, and just all the kinds of things that they do for their employees. It's certainly pretty impressive.
It impresses me. That's what, I mean, I know that they'd prefer to, you know, turn that into some wins on the field, but hey, you know, as long as they have to lose a few games, they might as well be having fun doing it, I guess.
Well, you know, Derek Hall said, you know, that you can't always control the product on the field, the injuries and, you know, bad play or whatever might come up, but that they always try to treat the employees first and control that, because they feel like if they treat their employees first, then the employees will in turn treat the fans the way, you know, the organization wants them to.
Pretty good philosophy. Okay, Steve, thank you very much. We will be seeing you very soon. We're going to do one of these in person next week, so looking forward to catching up with you. Thanks for listening to MLB.com Extras, the NL West.